Hello and welcome once again to In Their Shoes. My name is Vanessa Coleman and today my guest is Kerin Webb. Now Kerin is a psychic medium and a hypnotherapist. So welcome Kerin.
Hi Vanessa, thanks very much for having me on the show.
Well, it's certainly something of interest I'm sure to a lot of the listeners. So tell me a little bit of a potted history about your life and how you came to be a psychic medium.
Well, okay, I kind of, when I'm asked this question, I take myself back to an incident that happened in about 1976.
And you'd be how old then?
I was about 15.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was in an English lesson at school, and as I was leaving the classroom, I had a pile of books under my arm. And my English teacher said, "Oh, Kerin, what books are those?" And I showed him, and I'd been to Winchester Library, and at the time, if you wanted to read anything about paranormal subjects, you used to have to look into a section called the occult.
Yes.
So I'd go to Winchester Library, and I'd look in the occult section. I got books on psychokinesis, extraterrestrials occasionally, and things of that nature. And I had probably about three of these books under my arm. And I don't know whether you want to call it fate or synchronicity, but my English teacher, a chap by the name of Stan Payne, he was really into this stuff and he was very, very knowledgeable. And when he looked at the books, he said, "I didn't know you were interested in things like this." So we got to talking and he said, "Would you like to come back after class? Because there are some tests that we can do." So I agreed to come back after class and he did what's called a Zener card test. You may have seen these.
No.
Scientists tended to use them in the past. I don't know how often they're used now, but in the past, they would use a pack of cards consisting of 25 cards, each with five different designs. And you'd have like a wavy line, a square, a circle, triangle, and one other, I can't remember, maybe zigzags or something like that. And the idea is one person would look at the card with the back turned to the person that's potentially psychic, and they would look at the design on the card, and then the psychic person's job is to read that person's mind and see if they can get a sense of what the card is. And apparently, statistically, if you do, random chance will mean that a person will be right about five times out of 25.
Mm.
And we did these kind of semi-scientific tests, and my English teacher told me that I was scoring significantly above chance. So I guess that's the first formal way I was involved in this. Throughout my life, I've had many different psychic experiences. I used to hear spirit talking to me as a kid. In the October hurricane in 1987, I was down near Eastbourne attending a spiritual festival for 8 days. And in the evening before the hurricane hit, I'd rented a mobile home and the storm was beginning to hit the home and I could feel the home shaking. And I was in the bedroom and I looked up and I saw these two figures that fluctuated between being humanoid winged, like a proverbial angel.
Yeah.
And then it would become like fluctuating energy and then they revert back to this humanoid form. And literally coming from sleep, seeing these two forms floating above me, my initial reaction was to make a fist. I was shocked, surprised.
Yeah.
And you just like instinct takes over and I went like that.
Yeah.
And they disappeared. Then I got the sense that what I would now term spirit. Spirit was telling me, get up and get out of the room I was in. So I got up and I got dressed and I went into the lounge area and the storm was beginning to grow in intensity and the mobile home I was in was beginning to shake. And every now and again I could see like a 4x4, I think it was, car driving around the campsite, obviously looking to check that everything was okay. And the rain was lashing against the windows. And then I got the sense that spirit was telling me, have you ever been in a mobile home? They've got like one seat that fits
around the edge.
And then usually a table in the middle of what would be the lounge area. Well, I'd had a party the night before and I'd intended the next day to get up and clean the stuff that was on the table. So the table was full of cutlery and glasses and everything. And I got the sense that spirit was telling me, move the table to the back of the room. So I moved the table to the back of the room and I literally got down on my knees and leant on the chair and I prayed because it was starting to shake so much. And then I lay out on the fitted settee. And then suddenly the hurricane picked the mobile home up with me inside it, just like out of the Wizard of Oz, threw it through the air, it smashed it to smithereens, it took the side off of a mobile home that was parked near it, bounced it on my car, wrote the car off.
Oh.
Yet I, a human being,
yes,
found myself floating some distance away into some soft wet grass, and I was unscathed except for one cut on one of my ankles that needed a stitch in Eastbourne Hospital later that day. So in advance, spirit, I know when I've gone back over this, I've tried to figure out, you know, what went on, and I feel that the spirit realm told me to move out of the room that I was in, because it was a small box bedroom with a very small window, and they took me into the lounge with a window that ran the length of the room, and I feel that that's where I was ejected, catapulted through, and then somehow, you know, carried down into this soft wet grass. So I felt I was pre-warned, I was woken up, I saw these spirit beings, and then I was protected. So incidents like that, incidents like that are a regular part of my life. Actually, they're not. Spirit communication is a regular part of my life, but fortunately, that kind of thing is rare.
So you just said that you prayed. So are you a Christian? What is your faith? And how does praying fit into, obviously, some people would say that this is all part of the devil or things like that. How do you square that?
Okay. A couple of questions there, Vanessa, and they're both very apt. The nearest description I would place upon myself would be a spiritualist. That's probably the umbrella term that fits most closely with my beliefs. However, I'm a little bit cautious about putting labels on myself, because as soon as you do that, people either look at you through a filter.
Yes, yes.
So I think there's a lot of good in lots of religions. Unfortunately, what happens is people make dogmas out of them, and that's when they become problematic.
Mm.
Those that say this is of the devil, that usually shows ignorance on their part, because the Christian church for a long time, there's a group within the Christian church, I think it's, what's it called, the Church's Society for Psychical Research. They've actually been doing research on mediumship and healing for a long time. Mm. And, these are ordained ministers of the Christian church. My experiences in communicating with spirit in this form, the messages that come from the benevolent spirit realm, and there is a light and a dark realm, the messages that come from the benevolent spirit realm are usually uplifting. Most people have people that they love that have passed away. So in receiving messages of evidence of their survival, that can help people deal with grief. It can be informative, educational, and usually the messages very often have within them a theme about spiritual growth and spiritual development. So contrary to being devilish, they're actually very uplifting, very light, in the sense of, you know, light and darkness. They come from the light realm, and they're usually quite inspiring.
Yes, I don't know if you know, but I have had a few experiences, and one in particular comes to mind, and that was when I had my Annabelle's agency. My manager at the time, I remember this day so clearly. We were sitting in the kitchen, and she'd just come back from visiting her mother's grave, and she was quite upset, and she said she couldn't stay. And I sat there, and I had a strange feeling. And all of a sudden, this voice came out of me. It wasn't me speaking, but it is. And basically, I just said to her, you know, your mother is glad that you went. And I was talking, and she said to me, oh, she said, you sound just like my mother. I mean, it was a very strange experience, but all I know is that she felt good that I, for what I'd said. As I say, I've had these odd things every now and again. In fact, when I went to America, I met a Jungian psychologist, and he said that he thought I was a shaman. I wasn't sure whether that was good or bad, but I've never, ever taken anything any further. I've just accepted that I feel connected to things that I can't see. I feel guided, and I feel looked after.
Yeah, well, I think, Vanessa, that's a very good example of how people like yourself, there are a lot of people with mediumistic and shamanistic ability out there. Now, you've been fortunate to have had the experience of somebody to give you an indication as to what your background is. A lot of people go through life and they have these experiences, or they have this latent ability, but through either cultural conditioning, Maybe the growing up in a family where things like this are taboo because some people say it's quote unquote of the devil. They maybe they suppress it. I think you know that clairvoyant psychic mediums are basically shaman. So from other you know in other cultures, somebody like me, like you, would be termed a shaman because we have these experiences, and that what your experience could be likened to spontaneous mediumship or channeling. And I think, were we to live in a society that was more open to this, it's becoming more open, by the way, because of television shows like Colin Fry, John Edward, James Van Prague. So the public's perception is changing significantly. But had were our society more like that, then I think we'd probably find more people were prepared to be open to this and therefore have more experiences like yours.
Yes, yes. So tell us a little bit about what you do in your... take us through a typical week in your life. What would you be doing now then?
Well, if I were doing a reading, people call for readings for lots of different reasons. And people will come in person, so sometimes I will be sat down with one or maybe two or three people at a time. Other times they'll phone from a different part of the UK or a different part of the world. And of course with Skype these days and Viber too. People can have readings from all sorts of places. I guess it depends upon, the reading will follow a certain course depending upon what the person's need is. Now, the amazing thing is, Vanessa, is I don't need to know in advance. I tell people, you know, when they contact me, I say, please don't tell me anything about yourself in advance. The less I know, the better, both from their viewpoint, because if meaningful evidence comes through, then we can say, okay, I know nothing about you.
Yes.
Therefore, you know, it's quite likely that this information is coming through psychically, spiritually. So, for instance, I might sit down 5 or 10 minutes beforehand, before a client arrives, and I'll do what I call tuning into spirit. I'll send my thoughts in the direction of my spirit guides and the spirit realm, and they'll usually give me, most of the time, not always, sometimes I have to wait till the client's there, but most often, I will start to get a picture of what's going on in a person's life. And I can remember, I'll give you an example, I remember an American lady came to see me. And
physically she came.
She came to, she was living in Bournemouth.
Mm.
And I jotted down loads of stuff on an A4 piece of paper. She walked in, she sat down. I said, okay, I've had the opportunity to tune in just before you've arrived. This is what I sensed. And I went through what the chef, and she, you could almost see her jaw drop.
Yeah.
Because it was so accurate, so pertinent. Mm.
Yeah.
And spirit knew why she'd called. In other cases, and in that instance, it was events going on in her current life. Other times it might be somebody that really wants to hear from their mother or father.
Don't you think that it's because we all want to feel connected, and I think we all want to feel loved, and if we think, and also I suppose that if we think that there is something to go to, that it's not just the end when we pass over.
I absolutely agree. I think that's one of the most powerful things that occurs with clairvoyant psychic mediumship. And I think, you know, when people, coming back to your earlier point about, you know, some people say it's of the devil, I think when a person realizes that life continues and that love continues, see, that's that, you know, you've really hit the nail on the head. The thing when mediumship occurs is if a parent's mother, father, a child that's you know, predeceased them, I remember doing a reading for a lady whose daughter had been killed tragically in a car accident just beforehand, just a few months beforehand. And you can imagine she was at, you know, ripped to bits, and in a really terrible emotional state. And fortunately, the evidence was able to come through her daughter's favourite pop group. I even, unbeknown to me, I described a place, like a chest of drawers, and it was quite specific, and I described this chest of drawers, and her mother said to me, do you know, that's where I've placed her ashes. Her ashes rested on the chest of drawers.
Yeah.
Sometimes names will come through, both common names, sometimes really unusual names, and the person will say, yeah, that's my father or my mother or my, you know, my uncle. And I think the fact that continuance of personality is able to be demonstrated in this way is a wonderful thing. And you know, I talked about society changing. There's research that's taking place at Arizona State University with Professor Gary Schwartz, where he's generated odds of 100 trillion to 1 against chance. when we studies into mediumship are taking place. And then there was Professor Emeritus Archie Roy.
That's a mouthful.
Well, yeah. I jot these down. I get asked these kind of questions sometimes. He was at Glasgow. He passed away recently himself, but he was at the University of Glasgow, and he did studies too, where they got odds of a million to one. Oh. So there's a lot of solid science behind this now to back this up. And I think both the science, I think John Edward, James Van Praagh, Tony Stockwell, Colin Fry, they've done a wonderful job to bring this to the public. And it demystifies it. It shows people that it's not something to be afraid of.
Yes.
And that the messages are uplifting.
Which thing do you prefer the most? Do you stand up in front of audiences as well? Do you do anything like that, or is it just on a one-to-one kind of?
It's mainly one-to-one. I did do they call it platform work in the field. It's usually where you go to spiritual
church. So was Doris Stokes? She
was a platform medium. She did one-to-one readings, and she did platform work and television work.
Yeah.
I did an event recently at the Springfield Hotel in Wareham where we had, it was about 10 people, I think, around about 10 people. That's a whole different ball game again, because when you're doing one-to-one, you know the messages of the person with you. And occasionally you might have a mother and daughter come along, so you know it's going to be for the mother or the daughter. When you've got 10 people...
Do you get mixed messages then? your wires crossed.
Well, sometimes when I've done like two people in a room, the spirit will move between, I'll say this is for you, and you get a sense this is for the person over there, and I go, okay, now I'm moving around to you, and you go like this.
Yeah.
Sometimes, because it's a flow of information, I might have difficulty discerning who it's for.
Yeah.
And I remember a slightly different example, but it's a good case in point. I was doing a reading for a lady a number of years ago. About the first half hour of the reading was all about her. And then at one point she said, Karen, can I ask you to pause? I said, yes. She said, I just want to tell you, everything you're telling me now is accurate. She said, but it's not about me anymore, it's about my sister. No, I didn't know. It was just a flow of information. It turned out her sister was going through a really rough patch. So Spirit took the opportunity to give some helpful advice for 5 minutes in her sister's reading. And then they went back to my sister. So... doing a group is a bit different, in as much as sometimes the information, when you've made that connection with somebody, it's easier to identify. So they said, yes, I can accept this. And then the next bit that comes through, and there's like a feeling I got, to identify that it was still for them. But sometimes when you're trying to identify who, the thing that, identifies it is the fact that you're talking about. For instance, I remember I think that in the group I said, okay, they want me to reference Lords, and the person said, oh yeah, I can take that, and then more stuff came through. But usually if there's a couple in the room, it tends to move between the one and the other, whereas if one person's in the room, just a matter of fact. In fact, people sometimes ask me, they'll say, can my friend come and sit? And I say, your friend's welcome to sit in, but there's a very good chance their spirits, their loved ones are going to come through too. They'll just take the opportunity to jump in.
Oh no, I like the light shining on me.
You like that? Well, in fact, most people usually go, oh right, well, I want the reading to be about me. I'll tell my friend to wait outside or something.
Yes, yes. In fact, I've always been interested ever since a child. My mother always used to see clairvoyance and things like that, and I was always fascinated, absolutely fascinated. I remember my sister having a reading by this I know this is slightly different, but Kelly Von somebody, she said to my sister that she'd be involved in politics and MPs and all the rest of it, but in actual fact it's me. It's me, because I was always thinking, oh, maybe my sister is going to be an MP or something, but no, it's funny, isn't it? And the last thing that I thought about years ago was politics.
Right.
So I am. We're slightly moving on now. We're onto politics.
Right. Yeah.
So I see that you follow me quite a lot on Facebook and Twitter, so you obviously know my political allegiances, and I believe that yours are fairly similar.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
And why do you have these? Tell me about your political beliefs and where we're at right now then.
Well, it's difficult to pin down when I first became interested in politics. I watch the news. I keep up to speed with the news. I think it's important to be informed.
Yes.
The world is, there's so much going on. Mm. Occasionally one meets a person every now and again that has no opinion or they're not informed. And I think it's vital.
Yeah.
You know, we all have a vote.
Yes.
I think when we exercise that vote, we need to know, we need to have an understanding of why we are voting for a certain party at a certain time.
Yeah.
The politics is rife with people, you know, the old story, isn't it? Just before an election, we get lots of promises made. I think that's one of the things I liked, and one of the things, many things that I feel very good with UKIP. They had their manifesto independently assessed, didn't they?
Yes.
Calculated. Whereas very often what happens is lots and lots of promises are made, but come the party getting into power, very few of those policies come through. I think the EU, I did a posting myself yesterday, I think the common market was a good idea. A common market where a group of people, you know, trade restrictions are pushed aside and you can trade. I think that's a great idea. What we didn't vote for was a bureaucracy somewhere in Brussels making laws for you know, British people, and I'm sure the same for the Germans and the French. You know, I know the media, I guess, is biased, and a lot is not reported.
That's an understatement, yes.
It is.
Yes.
But I think that the common market was a good idea. I think a bureaucracy that basically tells us what to do, writes our laws for us, is not a good thing. And I think Britain is very fast losing its voice. And I think UKIP, some members of the Conservative Party, and we're finding now with the Out campaign, you know, Labour members, it's there are people from all of the parties that are saying, OK, we really need to get out and, get our voice back, be able to act independently on the world stage and not having people, you know, over on the European mainland saying this is what you must do. And, you know, if we go, well, actually, we don't want this, that, you know, so many times they go, well, hard cheese. This is the European law, and this is what you've got to do.
Well, of course,
and that's not democracy.
No, well, there isn't any democracy. They've even admitted that there really, really isn't any democracy. It's as if they think we're not capable of making up a mind about things, that, you know, we need to be told what to do. But, and of course, for me, it's that when people are unelected, that means you can't get them out, doesn't it?
That's
you know,
true.
I want to be able to vote for somebody. But anyway, I think it's practically impossible for 28 so different countries, different cultures, different things to ever be the same. And we are an island people. And I think that most people, if you took us, if it was now 1973, if you said to those people in 1973, well, actually, you know, we are being asked to be part of a political, ever closer union, how would you vote? They wouldn't. They wouldn't, would they? We were conned. We were conned because, like you say, although I have to tell you, I don't know if you were old enough, but I voted no. It's not that I particularly knew what I was doing. It was just that my husband at the time was older than me. And this isn't very PC, but he did say, no, he said, we don't like the French and the French don't like us. We're voting no. So, you know, I mean, it was a long time ago. But and quite frankly, I was never that interested in politics. I was too busy trying to build businesses and just get on with things. But I think it's a sad state of affairs that we are in now. One must never lose control of one's borders. And I think what people don't realise is that it's, if we do say yes, then they've got us and that's it.
And the euro, of course, that's been a disaster, hasn't it? Marrying Northern European economies to the Southern European economies. They were so out of sync. That, you know, what's happened to Greece and what looks like potentially is on the cards for Italy and Spain, who are in a very, very bad way. You know, that was, again, that was an ideology. I talked about religious ideologies.
Yeah.
And that's where you get problems. So the same happens in politics. And I think that was an ideological diktat that was carried through by these bureaucrats to create this one currency in order to create the sense of a European superstate. But of course, what's happened is the German economy and the French economy are very different from the Southern European economies, and it's created a disaster. And you know, this is what happens when ideology gets in the way of pragmatism and fact.
Yes, well, you know, I did have an Italian boyfriend, and I'll never forget one of the things that he said was that in Italy you're looked upon as a fool if you pay tax. I mean, you know, if it's part of the way things are, and that's then it's very difficult, isn't it, to mix that with the economy, particularly of Germany. No, I think you're right. I think that people would be quite happy for, you know, to go back to that. Yes, we'll just have a trading agreement. That's great. And we can be a strong trading bloc, but not this political union. So I guess you've answered my final question, which is always, if there's a referendum tomorrow on the EU, how will you vote?
I'm voting out.
You vote to leave. Yeah, yeah. Regardless of what David Cameron comes back with?
Well, I don't think he's going to, you know, let's be clear, I don't think he's going to come back with anything substantive. I think we're better off out. And my concern is, if David Cameron comes back with promises, you know, I made the point before that political parties very often before an election will promise the earth.
Yeah.
When they get into power, they renege on the promises.
Yes.
Or some of them at least. If promises are made to the British people in order to act as a sweetener to cause us to stay in the EU, who's to say that those promises will either be carried out or be carried out in full?
Yes.
You know, once the referendum has taken place. So I think we're better off to have a friendly relationship with our European neighbours, but I think we're better off out of Europe and
well,
our own voice.
Yes, and of course, once David Cameron, once he said he gave a cast iron guarantee.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
That was not there. Well, it's been really great to meet you. And next week, of course, we are going to be talking to your
partner.
Your
yep.
partner, yep. Chrissy.
Fiance, yeah.
Yeah, fiance. When did we get engaged?
December the 28th of last year. So
we're coming
up
right.
for our year.
Well, I look forward to meeting her next week. But anyway, in the meantime, Kerrin, thank you so much for today.
Thank you very much, Vanessa. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And hopefully, as I say, next week we'll be talking to Chrissy. And in the meantime, everybody have a great day and speak to you next week. Bye.